Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, tobacco, alcohol, ultra-processed foods and fossil fuels. These four industries cause 2.7 million deaths in the European region each year. It's a staggering figure. So why are governments not going to greater efforts to prevent the killer diseases and deaths caused by these industries? My next guest says the answer is that big lobby groups are determined to skew the science and derail any efforts that get in their way of boosting profits. Mark Pettigrew is Professor of Public Health with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Good morning to you, Mark.
Oh, hello, Claire.
Thank you very much. Not at all. Thank you for joining us. Now, you don't pull your punches when you talk about these industries. Is it true? Can we attribute those 2.7 million deaths to them?
I think it is, and if anything, that might even be something of an underestimate. And as you say, it's quite difficult to, confidently point the finger at the industries that you mentioned, simply because they're very good at avoiding blame and shifting the blame to others. So their political practices and actually a lot of their marketing practices are designed to shift attention. To shift policymakers' attention and public attention in other directions. So it's a challenge, but the figures are fairly consistent across different countries in relation to the harms that these industries cause.
Well, let's take a look at each one now. We'll start with alcohol. Like, we know about the harm that alcohol can cause. We hear a lot about it. But every so often then we'll see a scientific study that makes a claim that there could be a health benefit if we drink in moderation. Think about a glass of red wine. I think most people would think that if you can keep it to a glass, it's probably going to do you some good. Should we believe that?
So alcohol is a good place to start, actually, and probably red wine, because as you say, there's a public perception that it's good for you. And in fact, this is one of the areas where there's two interesting dynamics going on here. One of them is the evidence doesn't clearly show that alcohol consumption is good for you, even red wine. The evidence that there is hugely distorted by alcohol industry funding. In terms of whether it's red wine or white wine or whiskey or whatever, alcohol is just alcohol. You know, there's no evidence that one type of alcohol is any better than any other. But for red wine, for example, or alcohol to be good, for red wine specifically to be good for you, these studies that you mentioned, they often refer to or they look at the effect of a polyphenol called resveratrol. And the studies are generally conducted in mice. So, you know, I'm assuming that, most mice aren't particularly interested in promoting their health that way. So the studies are generally animal studies. There's no good evidence that there's any benefit particularly. But there is a lot of evidence on how the alcohol industry has funded studies to show positive effects, for example, on cardiovascular disease. So it's an area in which the evidence is at best uncertain, but there's no reason to think that it's good for your health. But what we do know is that consumption of alcohol increases the risks of stroke, cardiovascular disease, cancers, including breast cancer, colorectal cancer. The evidence for benefits is weak and uncertain. The evidence for harms of alcohol consumption are pretty clear, and we've known that for at least 40 years.
This comes back to this phrase that came from the 1960s, when at that time there was an awareness growing around the harms of smoking and the tobacco industry. And it was said by the industry that doubt is our product. And explain to us, Mark, how you still feel that thinking is still happening in these industries.
Yes, so the quote that you mentioned, doubt is our product, is from an internal memo, a tobacco industry memo, in which the tobacco industry talked about their strategy, if you like, for misleading the public about the harms of their product. And they said in that memo that creating uncertainty on doubt that smoking caused lung cancer and smoking caused cardiovascular disease, creating doubt, that would be successful for them because it would shift blame. And so the group that I'm part of at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, we've done a lot of research across different industries, tobacco industry, food industry, alcohol industry, opioids, gambling industry. And that strategy of creating doubt, that doubt is our product approach, is absolutely consistent across all of those industries. And many others have looked at this as well. So, and actually the fossil fuel industry as well. The fossil fuel industry took out numerous full-page adverts in the States to dispute the fact that the fossil fuel industry was contributed to climate change, and it used a sort of a doubt is our product approach, in which it promoted doubt about the causes of climate change.
When was that, Mark?
I think this was in the 90s.
Okay.
And I don't know the exact date in front of me, but you know, not this isn't historical. This is, you know, reasonably recent, and so they promoted the opinion, if you like, that that climate change was actually caused by sunspots, by natural variation, by volcanic activity and so on.
But they can't successfully argue that now, in the same way that companies that sell cigarettes can't argue that there's any doubt around whether they cause harm or not. But what we do have now is vaping. And we'll hear that vaping is very useful for people who want to stop smoking cigarettes, and therefore they should be freely available.
So you get the same approaches across all of these industries, and there's no differentiation between them. So in terms of e-cigarettes, disputing the harms of e-cigarettes is also part of the e-cigarette industry approach. So again, creating doubt about harms, about the harms, and overstating the benefits. This is part of the... it's part of the toolbox, if you like.
But when it comes to vaping, and we've covered this in detail on the programme over the years, we are told by experts who've looked at this that it's very difficult to get a read on the harms from vaping because we simply don't have the timeline. Do you agree with that? That it is easy for the vaping companies to say it does no harm because we don't know that it does?
The evidence, there is evidence out there of the harms of vaping. I think it's obvious that they're less than the harms of smoking. But the other thing in relation to vaping and e-cigarettes is I think the other potential harm is that e-cigarettes and vaping, we create a generation of nicotine-dependent young people. And so even setting aside the reduction in the risk of young cancer, whether we want as a society to promote another addiction, it should also be seen as part of the harm. So the harms aren't simply limited to individual risk factors for specific conditions.
Mm-hmm. I saw on Saturday in my own town, as I was walking down the street, a boy who couldn't have been more than 10 vaping on the street. And I thought, gosh, that has become now acceptable. No one's going to stop that child and say you shouldn't be doing that or you're not allowed to do that, even though, strictly speaking, under law, they're not. But it has become very accepted, hasn't it?
It has. And I think part of the acceptance is the assumption, and also the line that's promoted, that they're useful tools for helping adults to stop smoking. But that conveniently takes away the fact, as you say, that their use has been normalised in children and young people. And so again, there is a lot of misinformation out there, I think, about the benefits of e-cigarettes in terms as smoking harm reduction tools.
The area we haven't touched on, Mark, is processed food, commonly known as ultra-processed food. We know that's marketed very heavily to children in particular, but also to the rest of us, whether we're aware of it or not.
Yes, excuse me, and I think... To some extent, we've talked about tobacco, we sort of think of tobacco and the tobacco industry as being different, and that, food is different, I think. In the public mind, we think, everyone needs to eat, so we can't really think of the food industry or the ultra-processed food industry in the same way. But those I suppose, merchants of doubt. Doubt is our product strategies are also used by the food industry. And the other thing, I mean, you mentioned ultra-processed foods. A really substantial part of the income from the food system, from the big corporate food companies, is actually generated by the manufacturing of ultra-processed foods. And the evidence is there that high levels of consumption of ultra-processed foods are harmful to human health and also to the health of the planet. So I think, in a way, the strategies and the harms are sort of consistent across these industries, and we sort of can't see the tobacco industry as being different, partly as well because the tobacco industry taught its strategies, the ones that we've talked about, to other industries. And, for example, there's a really great book called Sugar, Fat, Salt by American prize-winning journalist called Michael Moss, who describes how the tobacco industry, whenever it started to buy up parts of the food industry, one of the first things that the tobacco industry did was to teach its marketing strategies to the food industry. So all of these industries share strategies at a high level. You know,
to replicate,
to
replicate the early success of the tobacco industry.
Totally.
Mark, we'll leave it there for now, but it's been very interesting to speak to you. Mark Pettigrew is Professor of Public Health with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. November is well underway, so we're going to bring you the ultimate guide to what to watch, both on screens big and small. That's with Aoife Barry and Brian Redden after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.